Welcome to the Opawa Baptist Podcast. If you'd like to find out more about our church, visit us on any Sunday or online at opawa.org.nz.
But today what we're going to do is have a panel discussion on some of the things that we've been talking about. Now, yeah, as I thought about what are the big issues with work and faith, you know, one of them is that in our wider world, full-time parenting and volunteer work is of very low status. It's not regarded highly. And sometimes that sort of creeps into the church a little bit too. We tend to elevate professional and business success to a very high level as opposed to spirituality and spiritual depth. But we know that full-time parenting and volunteer work, these things really do matter to God, that they are important. The other thing, and that's the thing I want to talk about today, is that we often see paid work as some sort of lesser thing, as the secular, non-God part of our life that is there to fund other things or to do other purposes. But, and it's probably that I want to talk about most today. And so the story goes that a sparky, a teacher, and a tax collector wandered into a bar. Jeff, Kevin, Jan, would you come up, please? Okay, so I've asked, they're going to do a little bit of an introduction each. So the questions are to start with, what do you do? What does a typical day look like? What is enjoyable, challenging, or just plain difficult about your role? Jeff.
Well, I'm an accountant, not a tax collector, so I don't take your money. Typically, turn up at work, sit down at my desk, turn the computer on, and get the files out, and away I go. So that's basically where I'm at. So it's preparing end-of-year financial statements, working out what you have to pay for your tax, so doing the tax returns. And we work for, instead of big corporate companies, it's all small businesses, individuals, small partnerships, that sort of thing. What's enjoyable? Some of the things that are enjoyable are also some of the things that are most challenging. Meeting with clients. Some of them are very easy to meet with, whereas others seem to have a chip on their shoulder, and you've got to work through those issues. And some, you may only see them once a year, but they come in and you're almost like a confessor for them because they tell you their life history, and it's a case of having to listen. But that's quite a good thing at times too. What I do enjoy is being able to take all their information, complete their job for them, and have them leaving happy, and in some cases very happy because they're getting some money back. Challenging is the jobs that seem to drag on and on for a long time. You're missing some information, or you're waiting on someone else to provide something, or it just seems, and in some cases it can be 6 months, 9 months, and it's frustrating having the file sitting there waiting while you're trying to complete it. So it's that sort of thing which is real challenging.
Right, well, I've brought a show and tell because often people ask me what I do, and I say, well, I work for a company that makes soft starters. Does anyone know what a soft starter is?
Sounds like an ice cream.
But a small example here today, soft starter, is a device for controlling electric motors. Now, in layman's terms, power supply goes in the top, cable comes out the bottom to a motor, turn it on, and the motor turns and does its thing, all right? Starts and stops. So that's basically what we make, what we design, and what we manufacture in Christchurch. So my job is all around testing. I'm an electrician by trade, as most of you know, but I've sort of diversified a wee bit into the engineering game. So I test software and do a bit of maintenance work, do a bit of investigation into issues that might be going on. We have a global market, so we have all sorts of issues that occur occasionally around the globe, in different areas. They come back to us, what's going on here, so we test and we find out what's going on and we go from there. That's just a small example. Some of the items are like 2 meters tall, motors, which are big industrial stuff, so it's all heavy gear and lots of expense and that sort of thing. I guess the challenge is every day is a little bit different. You can't really predict what's going to happen. There might be a series of tests that you're doing for a particular new design or a new range of products, which is a bit more consistent, but then again, you might get a breakdown, you might get all sorts of things, and I'm involved in the overall maintenance of the plant and that type of thing. So it keeps me busy. It's variety, which is all good. The people part of it, I think, is the most interesting. You've got to get on with everybody, not just your immediate co-workers, you've got to get on with those people externally as well, and it makes for a bit of a challenge sometimes, but mostly it's all technical stuff, which I won't go into. So, very good.
Hi, I'm a primary teacher, so I teach Year 5 at the moment, and I thought I'd just run you through my Friday. Contrary to popular belief, we don't work 9 till 5, 9 till 3. yeah, surprising, eh? I usually roll up at school about 10 to 8, and from 10 to 8 till 8:30 is the time when the children aren't there, so I, you know, turn the computer on, look at emails if the computer will start, get basically check that I've got everything that I need for the day. So Friday, 8:30, the kids rock in, so I always ask them to come in and greet me and say hello and I chat to them. 9 o'clock, I was responsible for the team assembly, so that's me and one of the other teachers doing crowd control, and me leading 100 kids. It took me about 3 hours probably to get it ready for about a 40-minute assembly. Then we go into the classroom after they do fitness, and I stand and watch them. maths, spelling testing, morning tea, they go to Kapa Haka, some of them. The remnants stay, I look after those. In the other Year 5s, we do reading, we do writing, and then it becomes lunchtime. I'm on lunch duty first half Friday, so I'll stand there with the kids opening things for them. Please put things in packets they can open, people. I always say to them, which is a bit mean, oh, well, if I have to open it, I get to eat it, because their lunches always look nicer than mine. And then I went back and did about probably 10 minutes marking, then I sat down for about 10 minutes, and then it was afternoon. Winter sports started, so I don't travel with the kids, I stay behind with the remnant, and so I did netball coaching for an hour and a bit out on the field, which was lovely, beautiful sunny afternoon. Then the kids come back in, they get changed and go home, and then the second half of my job starts. So I started off by doing all the marking, because I'm one of those old-fashioned teachers who likes to mark everything. And then I did preparation. It takes me pretty much, they say, about an hour for an hour. So for every hour of teaching, you do an hour of prep. And so 6:20, I finally walked out on Friday. And that's pretty typical for a Friday, but it is my highest day of marking after school, because usually if I don't have a playground duty at lunchtime, I can get a little bit more marking done at lunchtime. So 8 to 6 is about my average. So it's not quite 9 to 3. What's enjoyable? Well, obviously I love teaching. It's not the sort of job, I guess it's true for most jobs, that you can sustain for any length of time if you're not absolutely dead centre in love with the job. I just adore it. It's fabulous. I love preparing for lessons. I love all the creativity that brings, mostly. Not so much at about 6 o'clock when it starts to get dark. I love seeing success. I love seeing kids enthusiastic about learning. I love knowing, seeing them do something and thinking, I taught them that. That's pretty exciting, believe me, because so quite often we see things and you're thinking, oh, golly, haven't I taught them that yet? And of course, I'm passionate about learning new things myself, so teaching suits me down to the ground. The challenges, of course, is all the paperwork. There is a lot of it. Every time they bring in something new, they never drop anything off. We just add that in. And so it's getting overloaded, the curriculum. Helen can nod, can't she? Yeah, she's nodding. There's not enough hours in the day. I never go home having finished everything. I think tidy the desk has been on the list of things to do for about, well, ever since the term started, and every time it just falls down to the bottom of the list and I rewrite the list and add it on the bottom again, and it never happens. The constant changes in education, there are a lot, and some of them are quite worrying what's happening. And I worry about the kids. I worry about the kids in my class. I worry when I think they're not making the progress they could. I worry about what's going on for them sometimes at home or sometimes, you know, other things. And I worry about kids in general in society, because I think there are changes that I can see over time that I'm not sure are going to be good long term. If anyone wants to talk to me about that, I'm quite happy to talk, but it's probably not for today.
Okay. Occurred to me as I was listening to your answers that, Jeff, your work would go on sort of a bit of an annual cycle with the various tax returns that are required and all that kind of stuff. And Jan, you've got a sort of a cycle too, yep. Not so much you, Kevin, because who knows what the machine's going to do tomorrow. How's that cyclical sort of nature of things for you? Is it a positive thing, or how does that work, that rhythm of the year?
What is good about it is, you know, come May, everything picks up. So this time of year, we're just flat out. So we know it's there. Later in the year, it'll go quiet because people forget about taxes until we chase them up again at the beginning of the year to saying you haven't got much time left to get them done. And so then the last 3 months of the year, February and March, it's flat out again. So, yeah, it goes in those sort of bits.
Yeah, and it would be the same for me too. The term time quite often starts really, really hard straight in, and then there's sometimes a little dip around about week 3 or 4, and then you start building usually to like three-way conferences, or if you're doing a production or something like that at the end of the term. And then the holidays, and we do get holidays, it is true, but you know, those first 2 weeks, the 2 week breaks, by the time you actually come down, it's time to gear back up, actually. The end of the year, really, when the kids walk out and finally, you know, I've pretty much done, that's about the only time that you feel like the job is finished. So, and then at the beginning of the next year, you start gearing up for the next class. So, yeah, there's a definite rhythm pattern.
And, Kevin, yours is a bit all over the place from what you were saying.
It can be more consistent depending on what's happening at a particular time, what projects are on, that type of thing. So, but yeah, it has that element of unpredictability.
Would that suggest that to be an accountant or a teacher, somebody who likes rhythm and a sort of more of a routine in the way things go, would be a better fit than someone who is like spontaneity and difference?
I'd be no good as an accountant.
Okay. Because it's interesting for me, because it's not something you would sort of think about when you were. One of the things I want to ask you about now is, you know, what led you to your particular job or career choice. But it seems that there's sort of probably a personality fit to some extent.
That wasn't my first choice. I was actually training to be a teacher and a member of a religious order at one point, so it was a U-turn. And it was what got me into accounting, really, was the fact that I was very good with maths at school, high marks in there, and so I was suggested that that might be a good fit, and so I went to accounting. But when I actually applied for this particular job, one of the things that came up was how are you with things that are repetitive, because the work is repetitive in a lot of ways, even though each job is different, there's a lot of sameness about it as well, and the same thing again next year, and the same one again next year. So that was a question that was raised. Are you, you know, content with that sort of work as well?
Has it turned out how you thought it would?
Eventually. Yes.
Okay.
The first few months were not, and I really struggled there. Because I was actually, my accounting was in business to begin with, and that was quite different from in an accountant's office. And now in an accountant's office, it's totally different too. And it's not where I wanted to be initially, but it's where I am now. Yeah,
cool.
In some respects, people do see teaching as quite repetitive, and that is very true. But within that, there's a huge diversity, because every year, even though I'm teaching the same class level, every individual in that class is quite different. And so it's a very strange same but not the sameness to it. And I have a list of things that I want to teach over the year about things, or to do with writing or reading. But how I go about that is really up to me, and to a large degree, and also so I'm able to tailor that every year to the clientele, the kids that I have in front of me. And so the year can look very, very different. Just as a little example, last week I taught my kids about paragraphing in writing. Now the year before no-show of that. We were still working on full stops and capital letters to the most part. So, you know, it makes a huge difference who you've actually got in front of you. So it's same, but new all the time.
What led you to that choice of going teaching?
I never wanted to do anything else.
Okay.
Both my parents were teachers, and my mum tells the story that when I was 3, I used to sit my brother in his high chair, poor boy, and teach him maths. I don't know what maths I possibly knew at 3. And I, you know, as a child, my greatest fun was teaching. Not so much my dolls. I used to think I had a more of imaginary class. And when I wasn't teaching, I was arranging mum and dad's library books in alphabetical order by author. Not library books, own books, I mean. Yeah. And I had a card system if my brother or sister wanted one of my books.
Has it turned out how you thought it would?
Teaching?
Yeah,
it has. And I still absolutely love it. I guess for me, my life hasn't turned out quite how I thought it would, in that I never thought that I would just teach continually, which is what I've done. But actually, you know, I just love it. I really do.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's important to know the fit that suits you in the role that you are. I mean, my family were all trades type people, and I guess there's a massive influence that your parents have on you as an individual as to where you're going to go in life, and whether we like it or not, that's just the way it is. So, yeah, I mean, I like working with my hands, and I guess there are certain things that you inherit from your parents, don't you? So, yeah, I mean, my father got me the job, apprenticeship at the freezing works years ago, and I kind of went from there, and I guess it's sort of who you know within the trade that gets you other positions. Interesting, I think, in Christchurch at the moment, when we look around, there's a lot of uncertainty about jobs, there's a lot of uncertainty about different career paths, and I think you've got to be careful nowadays for all you young ones out there. There's not too many here today, but, you know, choose wisely, because in future things do change, and change is unfortunately something we all have to put up with. It's inevitable, and you have to change with the times. If you don't change with the times, you're going to go backwards, or you're just going to fall off the end of the cliff. So, yeah, I mean, learning to cope with change is very important. Yeah.
Has it turned out how you thought it would?
Did it turn out how I thought it would? I have no preconceived ideas. When I was at school, I was good at art, and I wanted to be, I liked tech drawing. I wanted to be an architect, but that never happened. So, but as I say, you got to go with the flow.
Jan.
Yeah.
I think though for us, I mean, we're all of a similar generation, and I think the reality is now that the world is a bit different, and that people, young people, are able to have more than one career. They flit around, and I don't mean that negatively, but the opportunity is there to reinvent yourself. I've got a sister who's just done that recently. She was a teacher. And so, yeah, so no door, I don't think, is ever closed these days, whereas for us, perhaps, what we start in is what we're going to finish in, which is a, you know, societal difference. Yeah. But also, you know, from what Kevin is saying, I think that we don't encourage kids enough into the trades. And I see kids that I teach and I think, wow, you know, they've got all the skill set that I would imagine that would make an electrician. And yet the push is often more into academic because it's given more value. And that, to me, is just quite short-sighted, really.
Okay, yeah. All right. That's right. Jeff, what have you learned about yourself through your work? How have you grown?
I have learned to trust the Lord, because I've two jobs that I've been in previously have finished on me before I'd finished with them.
Oh.
One, I was with the milk board for a number of years, and then the government closed it all down, so we had to go somewhere else, and that's when I went to Outreach Press, and then Outreach Press came to the end of its life as well, and so I had to find somewhere else. But in each of those, where one door closes, another door opens. I've seen The Sound of Music. So
right.
One of the things I've learned is to, you know, trust the Lord in what you're doing. If you commit it to Him, He will open the new doors for you. But the other thing is, I've also learned the things that I can and I can't do, what my limits are, and I've also learned to admit mistakes when I make them. You know, I do make mistakes. Show me someone who doesn't. But yeah, admitting your mistakes, admitting your limits, but also being consistent and reliable and dependable. And that's something I think I have been able to achieve that people have commented on in the past.
What have I learnt? I think it doesn't matter what you do, it's your attitude towards it that makes a difference. It is what you make it. If it's going to be a boring type job that's in your own head, well, it's going to be a boring job. But if you look beyond that, you can actually learn a lot more, perhaps beyond what initially the job is. Doesn't matter if you are perhaps a street sweeper or a lawyer or a dentist or whatever. It doesn't matter, as long as you're doing it with some enthusiasm and looking beyond what the job is. Because every job's important. Every job, but it's just sweeping the floor, it's important. And that's what I've learned. It's not just a matter of who you are in your role, but yeah, take pride in what you do. It's about people as well. I think the job is about people. It's about who you work with. If you work for another company, it's about the company as well. It's about their attitude. It's the way they treat you. It's not necessarily just about you as an individual and what you actually do, but it's about the whole package. So, yeah, I think you get to a point in life, though, and I think I do have done too, where you think to yourself, well, do I really want to do this for the rest of my life? You get to that point where you're, you know, mid-50s or whatever, and you think, well, don't want to do this for another 10 years. Can I cope with it? My body's starting to ache a bit now. I can't do the things I used to be able to do. So, I'm talking to maybe some of the young ones. Think about where you want to be in 20 years' time, 30 years' time, because that will go just like that. And then you'll think, oh, how did I get here, you know? And did I make plans for where I want to be in the next 10 years, 20 years? Because then retirement's looming. And you think, oh, crumbs. am I ready for it, you know? So, yeah, time goes very, very quickly. Yeah. I work for the company I've working for now for 29 years, and that's a long time to be in one company. It's changed a lot, of course, but time just goes like that.
It is revealing about yourself, teaching, I think. You do learn about yourself. I think for a long time I thought that actually being a teacher meant that I could teach, but there was nothing, you know, that was it really. But I do have a skill set of things I can bring to into other situations. So I guess it's given me confidence. I'm by nature quite introverted and quite quiet, and so being able to teaching has probably enabled me to do this, which I probably by my own natural inclination would have found really difficult. I think teaching, and I don't know whether, it's very hard because I feel I'm so much a teacher that it's hard to separate me from it. But I feel that I find joy in things, in the little things of life. And I'm really, really passionate about learning. For me, a day that I learn something new is a really good day. But yeah, and I think the thing that I've learnt most recently in teaching, because all I ever wanted to do was teach. I never wanted to go into management, become a team leader or a principal or anything like that. But actually, I have got quite a bit of collected knowledge in my brain, I've discovered. That is because I've taken on a couple of roles recently at school that I would never have thought I would ever do, really. So that's been quite revealing for me, learning about myself. But yeah, I guess there's that comfort of knowing that you are where God wants you to be. And I firmly believe that he made me to teach, and teaching is my mission field, really, and has been all my life. Yeah.
Cool. What does do your work for God look like for you? What does it mean for you?
For me, it's really about you're on show all the time, but it's not obvious. When I was with Outreach Press, it was quite easy because it was a Christian environment, and so we're often talking about things like that. But in where I am now, it's quite the opposite. And whilst the others all come from they've had Christian background at some point, none of them I would call Christians at all. So I'm in a way the light that shines in the darkness, but without being overt. So there are some days when on the way home and I think, I haven't really thought about the Lord all day because I've been too busy working and what I'm doing. But it's the way you do it and the way you interact with others and your way you talk with them morning tea or afternoon tea, and they're always aware that, yes, you are a Christian. And I had a case earlier this year with the boss. His partner had a son who was tragically killed, and just in sharing with him, and as he was explaining it to us, and I was able to tell him, I'd love to pray for you for that, and continue to pray for it. And it's, he was able to accept that, and knowing that that's what I do, that's what I'm about. So it's situations like that where people can they know you're a Christian, and then there are times when they'll come and ask you things, and that's not the first time that he's done that with different situations. So it's being there when it's necessary.
Yeah, I think that's very true. It's often people get hung up because they're not being a great witness at work, or they feel like they're letting God down or something like that. You know, I'm not doing what I should be doing. I'm not out there preaching. I'm not out there, proclaiming this and that. But it's not about that. It's about being you in your environment you're in. It's important that people know that, like Jeff said, they know that you're a Christian, but it's not about going out there and Bible bashing people. People aren't silly. They're not bereft of knowledge. They're not actually waiting there like school kids in a class waiting to be told about Jesus. Often they know a lot about stuff, and we can actually be a little bit too preachy sometimes if we're not careful. So it's a matter of taking advantage of opportunities when they come. If an opportunity arises, someone wants to talk about it, it comes up, there's your chance to get in and say something. But if it doesn't necessarily come up, be very careful about how you bring the subject up, because there are lots of bad witnesses out there for Christianity, and unfortunately these are the things that stand tall in people's minds. So yeah, be careful, don't preach. But when opportunities do come, we had, similar to Jeff, we had one of the, my colleagues actually was killed in a cycle accident this year, and dreadful thing. And it gets people thinking, there's your opportunity, get involved, say something, and just be available, I think. But God's there, God's in your work, he does care for you, he does know who you are, he knows your name. Often we don't think he does. Often we think he's forgotten about us, in some mundane, boring position that we're in, but he hasn't. And he does know you, he knows where you are. As far as rewards and things, I think God will provide your needs. That's what I've learned. He won't necessarily provide what you want. I might want that thing, I might want that, but he'll provide you at your point of need. And it's good to put things in perspective too, maybe. There's always someone a little bit worse off than yourself, so yeah.
For me, it's a little bit unique, I guess, in teaching situation, because I teach at a Christian school, and so we weave God into every day. We start with a devotion, and we, everything that we do is built around the principles, the biblical principles, basically, in a biblical worldview. So that in itself comes with its own set of challenges, because, I really have to walk the talk. Basically, if I'm telling my kids or we're talking about something, but I've got to be showing evidence of that as well. And sometimes that can weigh quite heavily, because we are all human and we all do make mistakes. We all occasionally get it wrong. And so a lot of the kids that I'm working with, they grow up in Christian homes. They're church attenders, and so they know it. But what I'm trying to work on is to get it, to heart. And so that it actually will, it's not just something they can say. It's a bit like the joke about the squirrel, where the little boy at Sunday school calls out, the answer's Jesus, because he knows, even though they said, what's got a long tail and eats nuts, because he's at Sunday school, so the answer's always Jesus. We want to get them past that, and that means that you've got to be evidencing those fruits and those things in your life as well, whilst still, remaining in crowd control of however many kids are in front of you, and catering to the individual needs, and dealing with parents who sometimes get quite het up and about things that they, it has its moments. But for me, as long as I keep just remembering that's probably the thing, that what I'm doing is for God, it's what I believe He's called me to do, and really I can just do that. I only do my best and pray that His you know, he will be with me and helping me as much as he needs to, really.
Jeff, I come into your office. I've made a hash of my last two GST returns. And I've got a shoebox full of receipts. It's not that unrealistic, actually. And you sort me out and you manage to get the IRD to waive their penalties and all the rest of it. Do you have a sense of God in that?
Sense of achievement?
Yes.
Yeah.
But that God is pleased with you?
I haven't actually thought of it like that. It's the achievement is knowing that you're in the place God wants you to be and doing what he wants you to do.
Sure.
And at the end of the day, if that's the sense that I have, then yes. Yeah. And
so you have the same sense of call that Jan does,
yes,
but you're not in sort of a people, Christian-forming sort of a role.
Yeah.
But yeah, still.
Yeah. We've all got a role, and sometimes it's not what you start out thinking it's going to be, but I am convinced that I am in the place where I am meant to be,
cool.
that the doors were opened for me to be there and to do that. And I sort of remember the story of the boy walking along the beach, and all these starfish had been washed up on the beach and they're all out of the water, and he was picking them up one by one and throwing them back, and someone came along and said, look, you're not going to be able to save them all, you can't help them all. And he said, but I can do my little bit, and just even if it only saves one. So it's, I'm doing my little bit where I am, and as long as I'm doing what God wants, then that's what I'm supposed to do, in that place.
Kevin, in your context? You fix up a mess in someone's electrical context.
About, job satisfaction.
Yeah, and God in that place.
I think there's some satisfaction to be had. I mean, I like having seen something that I've created or achieved or produced or fixed or something. So, yeah, I guess God's in that. I think you've got to be constantly aware of maybe, are you, like Jeff was saying, are you in the right role?
Yeah.
And your role might change within an organisation, or it might change to another organisation. But just be aware that, you know, if you're unsettled or you're not quite sure that's the place where you should be, just pray about it. And if something comes up, then look at the opportunity. But if nothing comes up, that's where God wants you to be. You've got to be practical about it. Otherwise, you could be very proactive and hop from job to job, which is okay, if that's what you think is appropriate.
Excellent. Look, thank you three. The teacher, the tax accountant, and the Sparky left the bar. Well done. Okay, how many people here have actually retired? Yeah, there's two or three of you. I think this is still actually quite relevant for you folk, because Socrates, I think, said something like, the unconsidered life is not worth living. And it seems to me there are some quite big questions for people who have retired to look back on. You know, what led them to their particular choice? How did it turn out? What have they learned about themselves? How have they grown? These are big and worthwhile things to have a think about, particularly if there is regrets or sense of loss or grief that's associated with your working life, to actually work those through and to have a happy retirement. And to help you in that process, I've invited young Roger, recently retired, to come up. Roger, man of leisure. Listening to the conversation, anything you wanted to add or comment on?
With most of the challenges and enjoyments, they're the sorts of things I got from it. The challenging parts with the clients, with the kids, as Jan said, or with work colleagues, sharing with them. You know, they can be challenging. Days are different. Yeah. Every day you're going to work, you don't know who you're going to meet, who you're going to talk with, what's going to happen. It's all different. But the enjoyment was the achievements. Preparation, design and build, and practical as well, same as Kevin. And you know, that's enjoyment of designing and building something. But the main thing was that came across was the comfort in knowing that you're where God wants you to be. That was the main thing that came across through that.
Do you relate to that from your own experience?
Yeah.
I thought interesting too that sort of being the God person in their workplace was something that came through too.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's died or someone's going through a trial, you can be the person who listens, who prays, whatever.
Yeah. most of my work, I was in a working life, it was in a large factory.
Right.
Where I was one of several Christians within that area, but yeah, people did come up and share things with you, want support, want help. People knew I was a Christian, and occasionally I've been known to spend a couple of hours sitting on the back doorstep listening to one lady I'm thinking of in particular sharing all the bad news of her husband running off with someone else. And I'm sitting there thinking, where does this fit in? But she just wanted to open up to someone and felt comfortable. You know, and it's some sort of relationships you build up with people.
So now, when did you retire?
15 months ago.
How's that been for you?
It's been good. Enjoyed it. It's been different. In working life, you're structured in what you do, and you've got a company or things that you've signed on and committed to going out 8 till 5, or what was Jan's, 9 till 6:30. Yeah. But you're committed to a time to work to a firm. Once you retire, you haven't got that commitment. And you've got to make the structured day yourself.
Okay.
I know when I first retired, I made a point of, I used to wake up the same time in the morning. I used to go for a walk each morning, around about 8 o'clock for about 3/4 an hour. And I thought, this is what I'm going to do. Rest of my retirement, I'll make sure I get this exercise. About 3 weeks later, I went on holiday for a week down south. Came back from that. And that following week, I got out twice. Then we went down to Osiris for several days. And I came back from that. And this is, well, over a year ago. And I think I've done that walk twice since. And they've been around lunchtime. So but, yeah, the structure's changed. Yeah. And it's now... Yeah. Trying to find other structures and other things, and God's opening up new channels to us.
How many people here might be retiring in the next 10 years?
Yeah.
Goodly number of them.
Down.
You've just gone through this. What would be your two or three things you'd want to say to those folks? Well, we've heard one about structure. Yeah. What else?
Well, developing your own structure.
Yeah, developing your own structure.
When you do leave.
Yeah.
Having a good base of people that you can work from, that you can work alongside, good contacts, being able to share things and grow with other people. That's an idea, but where you do volunteer could be anywhere. But having that group of people that you can support and they can support you.
And Sheldine, God loves you. And Rod has a wonderful plan for your life.
And having goals set, because you've retired doesn't mean you stop living. There's goals, there's achievements to be made, and it's amazing how God opens up channels and things happening in the future.
Thank you very much, Mr. Roger. Now, can I suggest that those of you who are thinking about career and what you might do, you've heard a bit today. There's a lot of wisdom in this room. There's probably one person who's done what you might be thinking about doing. So there's a conversation to be had there. And for those of you that are further down the track, maybe there's some reflection to do. You know, what led you to your particular choices about role? What did you learn about yourself through that experience? How have you grown? What did working for God look like for you? Because the answer to those questions will still be quite relevant in what you're doing now. Because as we've just heard, retirement is not the end of life. It's not going straight to the golf course. Sorry, Barry Weston.